WBSM presents The Barry Richards Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Text us using app chat on the WBSM app. Now, The Barry Richards Show.
All righty, welcome to our program for 12:15. No, it is 12:15 for a Friday afternoon at 12:15. How's that? What a way to start the show. Nice day out there. A few wispy clouds up there, but a pretty decent day overall. 77 degrees right here on the neck. Humidity feels nice and comfortable. Went for a walk this morning and enjoyed it thoroughly. A lot of folks are out on bikes. See a lot of bikes out there these days, bikes and electric bikes. People are out there getting their exercise. That's pretty cool. You know, as I was walking today, and I saw the bikes and the e-bikes going by, e-bikes are a relatively new phenomenon around here. I know they've been around for a while, but I mean, it's something that's caught on here fairly recently. And to the point where you see them daily. I mean, I see them daily out on the trail. And I got to thinking about roller skating. And I don't know, maybe it was longer ago than I remember, but it crossed my mind. You don't see anybody roller skating anymore or rollerblading. Remember, there was a big craze. People were out there rollerblading, and they all had knee pads on and helmets on, and they were doing these crazy rollerblades and roller skating. Is that like gone by the boards? Do people do that anymore? As I was walking and thinking about this, I think about the damnedest things when I'm walking, but as I'm walking along and I'm thinking about rollerblading and roller skating, it occurred to me maybe that was like the 1980s. Is that true? Was it the 80s and 90s? I don't know. It seems like it was more recent than that, but I don't see it anyway. I don't see it around. Maybe you see it, but and then that made me think about the days when we were kids, because I was thinking about the skateboard craze too. When you know, obviously one thought goes to the next, you know how that is. I'm thinking roller skating, and I'm thinking roller blades, and I'm thinking skateboards. And I don't see as many skateboards around. Kids still do skateboarding, but I don't see as many as, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so ago. I know when my youngest was growing up, when he was a teenager, all his friends were on skateboards and everything else. And then I got to thinking back about how when we were kids, we made our own skateboards. You didn't have fiberglass wheels and all of these fancy things like they have today. We used to take a picket from the picket fence and put roller skates. Remember, you had the roller skates that you attached to your shoes. They were metal. And they kind of slid open, and you adjusted it to fit your sneaker, and you put that on your sneaker, and then you tightened it up with the key, and that's how we skated back then. But you would take you could take the wheels off of those, or take the skate apart and attach each end to an end of the picket from the fence, and that was our skateboards back in the day. Come a long way, baby. People certainly are not doing that these days either. And I know somebody was lamenting the other day, and my friend Jen was lamenting the other day about how there are no more skating rinks, I guess, around. And there was one out in Taunton, I think she said, that she took her children to, and it was closing up that weekend, and she was kind of upset and said, gee, I wish I had the money. I'd open a skating rink for the kids because I missed that. And I remember Lincoln Park skating rink, and we used to skate at Lincoln Park. I think I was too old. I know Hot Wheels opened up. That was kind of after my time. And there was one here in Fairhaven behind me, which is now the pickleball court. That was a skating rink for a while. It's funny how things come into vogue and then they go out of vogue, right? They go out of style and people don't do them anymore. But skating used to be a pretty big thing. And, you know, my day we skated at Lincoln Park Ballroom. Next to the Lincoln Park Ballroom, there was a skating rink. And that was a lot of fun. I can remember doing that. I remember falling down a lot. I wasn't a good skater. I'm not good with anything athletic. You know, it's I'm just one of those people that was born with no athletic ability at all. I love sports. I love physical stuff, but I'm just not good at it. And So I would fall down. I would hit the rail. I would hit other people and all that kind of stuff. So my flashback memories of the day, various things make me think a lot about other things. And you wonder what over the time where things all went. And so that was it. But nice that we don't have a whole lot of smoke out there today. There was some yesterday. It wasn't as bad as the day before. I know when I got home to Dartmouth last night or yesterday afternoon after work, very heavy smell of smoke, but it didn't appear to be a lot in the sky. And then a little bit later around dinner time, there was a smell of smoke as well. Chance we could see some more this weekend. And got a couple of congressional Republicans in Michigan publishing a letter to Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney, demanding that his government act to improve forest management after years of negligence, noting that millions of people in the Midwest and Northeast United States will be dealing with toxic wildfire plumes for much of the rest of this week. The lawmakers noted that the letter was the third of its kind in 3 years, demanding that Canada take proactive measure to contain the possibility of pervasive forest fires, which dump prodigious amounts of pollution throughout the continent and have devastated communities throughout the country. This year's fires have so far crossed the border into Minnesota and are currently ravaging much of Ontario, covering the region, the regional capital of Toronto, in a cloud of orange brown smoke. Story written by Francis Martel, by the way, on Breitbart this morning. As of Tuesday, the pollution monitor IQ Air declared Detroit, Michigan, the city with the world's worst air quality as a result of the Canadian fires, followed by Minneapolis and Minnesota for the same reason. Air quality in much of North America during the summer has deteriorated significantly in the past decade as increasingly large and uncontrolled forest fires consume much of Canada, sending the fumes wafting south to the United States. Something interesting that I didn't know until I read this story this morning in preparation for coming in to speak with you. Canada does not have a national emergency management organization, leaving provinces to fend for themselves and use the federal government for coordination more than established resources. Internal criticism of the government's response to fires has persisted for years, from environmentalists, emergency professionals, and First Nations leadership, who observed that indigenous groups traditionally set controlled fires and cleared out dry undergrowth to diminish the threat of massive fires. The kind of stuff that folks in Canada should be doing. This is kind of stuff that the folks in California and out in the, we see a lot of these fires that are ravaging this country as well. And, you know, the cleaning out of undergrowth. I mean, we stopped doing that because the environmentalists think that it's better to have a dead tree limb in the forest because it's natural. That's the way God wants it. Well, you know, as we talked about yesterday, you know, folks want to live in the mountains and up in the hills. They all want to be John Denver and sit on the side of a mountain with your guitar and sing and all this stuff. And they got trees and nobody wants to clear up the brush. It's fallen to the ground and it just burns like kindling wood once the fire starts. And it spreads. Story says provincial leaders have offered excuses instead of results and in some cases have openly dismissed the health of American citizens as an inconvenience to their own summer. That attitude is unacceptable from a neighbor and an ally, the letter said. We are done accepting apologies in place of action. The lawmakers observed that American lungs are paying the price for a Canadian inaction and urge the Canadian government to accept that sovereignty comes with responsibility and the responsibility to prevent a foreseeable disaster from crossing into another country's airspace has not been met. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, here in Massachusetts, of course, as we mentioned yesterday, the Attorney General, Andrea Joy Campbell, wasted little time in blaming the wildfire smoke on Donald Trump. Writing on social media, have you seen the hazy yellow skies above Massachusetts? The wildfire smoke blowing in is a stark reminder that the climate crisis is here. If Trump succeeds in abandoning his duty to curb greenhouse gas emissions, wildfires like this will become more common. I'm suing because we can't wait to act. This woman is a nitwit with a capital nit. There's no question. Something else I wanted to mention here. Yeah, yeah. On and on we go. Mass Daily News reporting this morning the Brockton District Court released a Haitian illegal immigrant with a pending rape charge back onto the street after ignoring an ICE detainer. And ICE Boston had to rearrest him themselves. The agency said yesterday. See, this is how people get shot. This is how people get run over by cars. This is how all of these problems happen. District Court. Haitian illegal immigrant with pending rape charges. Put him out on the street. What could go wrong with that, right? God forbid we hand him over to ICE. The immigrant's name is Danilo Michael. He was taken back into ICE custody on June 30th during targeted enforcement operations in Brockton, according to the ICE Boston field office. Michael is from Haiti. His criminal record includes pending charges for rape, as we mentioned. ICE had lodged a detainer with the Brockton District Court asking that Michael be held after his court appearance so agents could take custody of him. You know, a manner that would be safe and efficient for everybody. Under the Trump administration's stepped up enforcement posture, ICE detainers on illegal immigrants with pending violent felony charges are treated as top priority takedowns. The court did not honor the detainer, and Michael was released. How is that even legal? How is that even legal? You got a court judge, district court judge, who knows this individual is a potentially dangerous person. Pending rape charges, but because the judge has a woody for Trump, we're going to put this kid back on the streets. We're going to put him out on the streets. That is how sick and demented all of this has gotten. Talked about this yesterday, you know, about how, and we've talked about this before, you know, a big part of the reason why we have so many folks out on the streets that are recommitting crimes over and over and over again. They're not being held. Judges are releasing them. Is because we have activist judges. And the reason we have activist judges, you know, particularly in a state like Massachusetts, which is deep, dark blue, right? The politicians that appoint the judges and that nominate the judges and that review their qualifications, the governor's council and... I mean, these people are all deep blue. They all went to school together. They all know each other. They went to the same colleges and universities. They belong to the same political party, the same clubs. They hang at the same clubs. They know each other. So they share the same political ideology, and that's how you become a judge in Massachusetts. And as a result of that, you know, these judges are advancing a political agenda from the bench. I mean, anybody with a half a brain in their head, which apparently this Brockton district court judge doesn't have, knows that you don't release an illegal immigrant with pending rape charges onto the streets. You don't do that. I don't know whether this guy's mother or gal's mother dropped them on their head when they were a kid, and then that brain cell somehow or another disconnected. But, you know, anybody with any kind of common sense at all knows that you hold somebody like that at least on bail, right? Ice Boston hit back publicly on X Thursday morning, saying ERO Boston will continue to do what sanctuary politicians refuse to do, keep dangerous criminal aliens off the streets of New England. Massachusetts sanctuary jurisdiction posture driven by SJC rulings, gubernatorial executive orders, and municipal ordinances has kept local courts and sheriffs from monitoring most ICE detainees, honoring most ICE detainers for years. The pattern is well established. What the ERO Boston Post makes clear is that ICE is prepared to burn resources rearresting the same individuals rather than let them stay out on the street. On the subject of immigration, we've got an interesting proposal from Representative Brandon Gill of Texas, Republican. I don't know if you've become familiar with this guy, but you should. I think he's got a bright political future. And he has introduced legislation, he did so yesterday, to ensure naturalized American citizens can speak the same language as their countrymen. In other words, if you're going to become a citizen, you ought to become naturalized. You got to speak English. You know, in the current situation, you have pockets of individuals who've come here from other places, and they only want to assimilate in certain ways, in certain cases. Well, when it comes to being part of the greater American experience, they don't want to learn the language. They don't want to be Americans all the way. They like the fact that they can come here and there are opportunities that they don't have in their home country. Take advantage of those opportunities. They can obtain money a lot easier here than they did in their homeland. They can obtain possessions here a lot easier than they can. So they like all that. But this whole part about learning American history and culture and speaking the language, who needs it? The English Language Proficiency Act, which was authored by Representative Gill, would rescind the English Proficiency and Civics Examination exceptions from U.S. naturalization laws. The English Language Proficiency Act, which was filed yesterday by Representative Brandon Gill, Republican from Texas, would rescind the English Proficiency and Civics Examination exceptions from U.S. naturalization law. While Gill's bill would not prohibit Americans from speaking languages other than English, ensuring Americans share a common tongue strengthens the civil bonds that hold communities and nations together. The legislation benefits prospective citizens as well by ensuring that they have an essential tool to assimilate into the society that they seek to join. Because remember now, anybody who comes to this country, whether it be legally or illegally, does so by choice. There are millions of people that come to our shores and to our borders every year from all over the world. They don't come here at the point of a gun. They don't come here under duress. They come here because they want to come here. It's a choice to come here. And yet many of them, once they get here, they don't want to assimilate. And they have expectations that ballots are going to be printed in their native language, that the schools are going to be, school lessons are going to be taught in, you know, multiple languages. So last I heard, there were about 48 languages at New Bedford High School. And I'm sure that's a lot higher in some of the bigger cities in America. You do better if you speak the language of the nation that you choose to come to. If you choose to come to America and you don't speak English, you are limited in how far you can advance and how well you can do. It's not that difficult to understand that. I can remember, and I probably mentioned it on this program before, you know, when the mills began to close in cities like New Bedford and Fall River, and we had these, you know, this is very true of the Portuguese community too. And the Portuguese community really first started to build up here in the 60s and 70s and so on and so forth. There were mills everywhere. And first generation, a lot of the parents never learned English. They didn't learn the English language. They were busy. They were out in the mills, working hard, purchasing property, getting their kids into schools, making sure their kids learned how to speak English and got an education so that the next generation could do better. And that is, you know, pretty much the story of the city of New Bedford from, you know, the 60s and 70s and so on and so forth. When the mills began to move out of New Bedford and Fall River and closed down and the economy began to crash and burn, a lot of these people had no English. How do you survive? How do you go from your neighborhood that speaks only your native language and you have no English skills and no ability to apply for something that will make your life better, another job or whatever? So the state sets up these training programs. Oh, we're going to train you. We're going to take this 57-year-old guy from Portugal, or this 47-year-old woman from Guatemala who's done stitching all her life in a mill that's no longer there, and we're going to teach them computer skills. How realistic is that? Whereby if you came to this country, or maybe during the time you are preparing to come to this country, you learned how to speak the language so that you can communicate. Got a leg up. Got a way to communicate. You can leave your neighborhood. So many of the neighborhoods around here, especially in the days where the Portuguese communities were developing here, you had neighborhood stores and schools and churches and everything. People spoke only Portuguese. Your bank. Once you had to move outside of that safety zone, it becomes very difficult for you. English is the common tongue that holds American communities together, Gill said in a statement to Breitbart News. It is of paramount importance that every American citizen be able to communicate in the same language. My bill holds everyone to the same standard already on the books, restoring equal treatment under naturalization law. Under current law, naturalization applicants over the age of 50 who have been lawful permanent residents for the last 20 years and applicants over the age of 55 who have been lawful permanent residents for at least 15 years are exempt from the English language requirement. applicants over the age of 65 who have been lawful permanent residents for at least 20 years receive additional special consideration on the civics examination. Gill's English Language Proficiency Act eliminates these age-based exceptions and requires naturalization applicants to meet the same English language and civics standards regardless of age. You know, President Trump talks about this when he talks about immigration. We want immigrants here. We certainly do. But we want immigrants who love America and love Americans, want to be Americans. Who understand and know the history of our country. And American values. You know, we don't want people coming here because they get free stuff. We want people to come here who want to be a part of our story. And, you know, it's nice when we see people who come to this country. And, you know, New Bedford was always a melting pot. You always, not so much anymore. But, I mean, I can remember as a kid in New Bedford, you had a Polish neighborhood. You had French neighborhoods. You had Puerto Rican neighborhoods. We had Cape Verdean neighborhoods. But yet we all came together as a community and we all shared the experience and the culture. But one thing we had in common is we all spoke English and we all wanted to be here and a part of the American experience. And that's missing today. To a large degree, people who come to the country who have no appreciation, no knowledge of how the system works or the history of our country really don't care. How can you possibly appreciate the place that you've chosen to call your home and to raise your family in? You can't. Civics is very important. You got to learn how we work here. Our history is very important because it defines who we are as a nation. And the language is very important because it allows you to communicate and to succeed and to extend beyond your neighborhood boundaries. All of those things are important. We should be teaching civics again to our American-born kids, too. We're not doing that so much, and we need to do a better job of that. All right, 508-996-0500. Let me grab a couple of calls before we hit the break. And you are first in WBSM. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Barry.
Hi.
I'm on now?
You are.
I'm on?
Yep.
Okay. I truly believe everything you're saying. My parents were Portuguese immigrants. They came to Fairhaven. They built a farm. That's many years ago. And I remember when I was only 6 years old, my mother wanted to become a citizen. She went up to a school we had here in Fairhaven at night to learn to read. And I don't think they even teach them that now. But she learned how to read, and she had to write her name before she could go to Boston to become a citizen. And she did. Now, I think she was the only neighbor in my neighborhood that became a citizen, and I'm elderly now. But I remember that so good. How my parents came here, they built up a big family. I came from a large family, and it was only farms when I was a little girl, and it's all outgrown now. But I remember my mother going to school, and I laughed with her because I wasn't in school then. And she says, I want to be an American. But today, there's still a lot of them here that never even applied. I think it's a shame. But it was all different nationalities at one time, Barry. I remember we had a Polish all up on the top of my street, and it was all Polish all along. The French were in a different section. It was all like that when we were kids, wasn't it, huh?
Well, you know, I can remember my Polish grandmother. They lived in the area around where the Center Theater was in New Bedford, down around Beale Street and the Polish Church and all of that. And, of course, up in the North End, you had the French section and, you know, up around Pine Grove and all of that. And, of course, the Portuguese, when they came here in the bigger numbers in the 60s and 70s, they kind of settled in the area near the mills. Many of them walked to the mills to their jobs and so on and so forth. But these were people that were they were proud to be here and they wanted to be here. And you know, they wanted to be Americans. And you know, many of them did. I'd forgotten all about it, but I do remember now at night school there were a lot of night school classes where immigrants would go to learn English at night after working in the mills all day. And because they wanted it, and they wanted it not only for them, but they wanted it for the next generation, their kids. And to secure a place for their kids. And you know, especially I can remember the Portuguese community, how quickly the Portuguese community assimilated. And just in one generation, these folks came here and already had home ownership. But they had to have sponsors, too. I mean, I can remember they had, in order to come here, you had to have a sponsor and you had to have a job waiting for you. And you got, you know, somebody you knew worked in a mill and they bring you over and you got had a job waiting for you in the mill and so on and so forth. And that's how these people worked so hard and were able to buy houses during that first generation of settling here.
Well, you know what, Barry? My parents came here in the 1800s. I was the last one born. My mother...
Whoop, I lost you there. I heard a click and then I lost you. All right, I'm not quite sure what happened. You disappeared on me, but I appreciate your story. Good story, good information, and good memories. Thank you, ma'am. Let me do a real quick break, and then we're going to come back with some more calls right here on WBSM. So stay tuned.
This portion of programming on WBSM is brought to you by Dee's Hot Dogs in New Bedford, where you can get two hot dogs, chips, and a soda for just $6.
Back to Barry Richard on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
All right, 12:50 on a Friday afternoon, 508-996-0500. Thanks for hanging on. You're up next on WBSM.
Good afternoon, Barry. Gilly Sapiola.
Hey, Gilly, I was right and you were wrong. Ha ha.
But anyways, I don't want to talk about politics. I want to talk about the lady that was just on there. And she tried to remember the name of the school that she they had. It was Knowlton, the old Knowlton school up there. Where I, when my sister and I came back, came from Greece back in the 90s. We went to that school to learn English. And we learned English where they put us at Ottawa the next year. They taught us the English language, Knowlton school. That's what the school that that lady meant to be, who was saying.
And, you know, and you're trying to remember the name of the school? Is that what you said?
No, Knowlton. It's the old Knowlton school that was on Cocktail Street around that area.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's the one that she was trying to think.
Okay.
And, back, and then in 59, when we came up there, after we learned how to speak English, we went to the... And in 1960, we became citizens of the United States, me and my sister. You know, so you know, what you're talking about, and I, when the lady didn't remember that.
Yeah, but it was a lot different back in the day. I mean, people when people came here from someplace else, they wanted to be able to assimilate for many different reasons. And today, that just doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
Well, that's all I wanted to tell you. But it was a zoo last night.
That's what I heard.
But I did. I did say that Scott Pendleton told me that he was going to go and vote. And then he got on Tim's show this morning, and he did verify that, that he did tell me. So I wasn't putting false information over.
Yeah, I guess from what I heard, he was tied up with the 50s night.
Yeah,
that
no,
is,
I even told him, when you talked to him, ask him if he didn't tell me. He did. When I made the comment that he said he was going to be there to vote, he did, and he verified that on the radio.
Yeah,
he did tell me. So, I called.
Well, I'm not defending him in any way, but I mean, sometimes you say you're going to do something, and you get tied up with something else, and you just can't get there. I don't understand why they scheduled that vote for that point anyway. I mean, they knew that certain people weren't going to be able to be there last night.
Barry, come on, you've been in this long enough to realize why they did it.
Well,
they were all connected. You know that.
Yeah. I know why they did it. I just don't understand why, you know. It assured the outcome. Right. Yeah.
I can tell you stories that happened last night. Unbelievable. But I just want to tell her, but no, don't school. That's what we learned, how to speak. I didn't know any English at all. Sometimes I speak now and I don't know some stuff.
Yeah.
So you have a nice day, Barry.
Thank you, Gilly. Appreciate it. 508-996-0500. And have I got time? Yeah, we'll grab one more before the break. You're next on WBSM. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, Barry. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. You know, I was just listening to that woman and it brought back memories of my parents. You know, my dad came here in 1957, and he came in the winter of 1957. And first of all, you know, my mom came like 3 or 4 months later, and you know, he had to have a sponsor. But getting back to the becoming an American citizen, so 3 years later, he used to work construction and my mom used to work in the sweatshop, and 3 years later, her family that was over in the old country started hounding, you know, my parents that they all wanted to come here. So, you know, my mom, which, long story short, that was a big mistake. But anyway, at that time, you know, my mom and my dad decided, you know, to become American citizens to do that whole process. And, you know, my parents, too, had to go to school at night. Like, it wasn't just one night a week. I think it was like 2 or 3 nights a week. When they would get home from work, they would leave me with some woman or somebody, you know, to take care of me while they were, you know, in school at night, learning what they had to do, about the presidents, the Constitution, the history of the United States. And I have to tell you, the stories my parents told me, number one, on the first try, my dad passed his exam. But my poor mom, on her first try, she did it. She almost had a nervous breakdown when she didn't pass the first time. So she had to go back to school the second time, which, thank God, she did end up passing the second time. But the difference of then and now was that it was a very long, brutal exam. They really had to know a lot about the history of the United States, okay? Like about the Constitution, the presidents, and the laws and stuff like that. And it was all in English. So not only did they have to, learn about that, but meanwhile, while they were at school, they were also learning the American language in order to pass the exam. It's not like now that I've heard that, you know, they only ask like 2 or 3 questions. And a lot of times, like, they can get by with, like, it doesn't even really have to be in English, whatever the test is. So they very easily become an American citizen. It's not like it was back in those days.
Well, you know, American citizenship is a very valuable thing to have, and it should be difficult. If you want to come here and you want to be an American, it is, you know, it is up to you, and you got to work real hard. And,
right. And
I'm glad
and
your mother tried, you know, a second time. I'm glad.
Yeah, I remember them telling me, my mom, like, nearly almost had a nervous breakdown, because in reality, it was her family and not my dad's family that needed to come here. Okay. So, you know, my dad passed and that was all fine, but he couldn't do anything as far as sponsoring, you know, my mom's family. So it had to be her. But yeah, but, you know, it was a difficult thing. It wasn't like it is nowadays. And, you know, and people still complain about it. Oh, you know, why do I have to go through that process? And, oh, why can't I just come into the... Yeah, no. You know, I'm...
When things are too easy, you don't appreciate it and you don't value it. And I'm sure your parents valued and appreciated their citizenship very much after all of that. I've got to hold you, my friend. Great story. I appreciate that very, very much. And I got to get a break. And though we're going to come right back.
Broadcasting live from the Carefree Home Studios, this is WBSM. Carefree Homes, your home improvement experts. Roofing, siding, windows, and more. Get a free quote at carefreehomescompany.com. Carefree Homes, trusted, local, family.
All right, we break for news right now. We'll be seeing news followed by our